Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and co-host 3 weeks in a row, he says with a question mark, Jessica Baker. Welcome. Welcome.
Thanks, Matt. Good to be back. I'm a regular now.
You are a reg. You are here.
I know exactly what I'm doing.
I feel like now is a great time to let our esteemed listeners know that Jess is actually taking over the Big Three podcast for the next month. I am smoke bombing this place, and my wife and I are going to go, you know, get ourselves a baby, which is well and truly
on its way. Really weird. Just going to steal
one. Just going to go get a baby. Jess is going to be hosting the Big Three. Yes. How are you feeling?
May the Lord take the wheel. Be nice to me, listeners, please.
Be kind. Yeah. Listen, I've got a little bit of a surprise for you, and this is either going to be hilarious or it's going to be atrocious. But I was thinking about, I was like, what does Jess need to just give her that confidence boost? And I feel like you need a theme song. And so I have a theme song for you. This is what I've got.
Okay.
And it's to the tune of the Carol Baskett song.
My favorite. Yeah, thank you.
I just feel like, I think, you know, if you just sing this to yourself at the beginning of every Big Three, you'll be ready to go.
Okay. I'm ready for it.
Are you ready?
Yes.
This is my gift to you. You're welcome. I'm a little bit nervous. This is my singer-songwriter debut.
Commit to it.
Okay, commit. Here we go. So it goes like this. It's, oh gosh. So Jesse Baskett delivered some babies, they're crying. Wait, no, your name's not Basket. Wait, no. Guys, let me start that again. Oh, gosh, I'm so stressed. I'm so nervous.
This works. I'm loving this. This works. Do you need to write it down?
This works so much better on my drive on the way in. I wanted something special for you when I was by myself in my car. Okay, here we go. Take two, guys. Here we go. All right, here's the world. This is my gift. All right, so Jesse Baker delivered some babies, they're crying. Working 12 hours, she trying. Hosted Big Three, she thriving. Jesse Baker. There you go.
What an anthem.
There you go. That's
yes,
for you.
Yes, I loved that. That was Lord fabulous. That needs to catch on.
Yeah.
Please, guys, whenever I walk into church, listen, I would like that song
gonna
to
go
me.
It's going
to
go viral. It's going to go viral.
What a treat.
Try and get that out of your head today. That's my challenge to you. All right. Well, now that we've had that little moment and I've just embarrassed myself on a recorded podcast, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, who preached during our online services this past Sunday. And Jess and I will be putting the Big Three questions to him as we seek to dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. So for those of you who missed it, Mark spoke on how the church is a family as part of our series called The Church Reimagined. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But for now, Jess, as we do each and every week, I'm keen to just kind of get your reflections and your thoughts coming out of Sunday's message. What stood out for you?
I thought it was just a really exciting sermon, this kind of new and radical way of looking at church. And I think it's so important in this time and what, like, especially coming from a young adult's perspective, we're a little bit lost in this world, poor little cherubs. We don't quite know our way. And to get a kind of a family network or a household where we belong and we know our purpose and we know the mission of God strongly and we're all working towards that together. It sounds really exciting.
I don't say funny. I think it's interesting. Like you say, the young adults are struggling. I totally get that. And I hear that from our friends. I think the world kind of expected them to thrive because we're, you know, millennials and we're all tech savvy.
Look at how many degrees we have.
So many degrees. Such a hex debt. But I think we've all kind of discovered that relational connection over, you know, social media and technology, it's not enough.
No, we're very lonely people.
Oh my gosh.
And so like this idea of I don't have a life group, I'm really looking forward to kind of joining one, but that group of people that are, you know, in this together and chatting about real life stuff, I'm really lacking and I'm really excited for.
And that this isn't a new idea. It's not a new idea for us as a church. Like we've been doing life groups for years now. But also like I loved how Rader kind of threw back to that early church and how like for Paul, who was writing in Ephesians, you know, like the household church was all he really knew. It's all he really experienced and saw. Like that was just kind of the way it worked. And it was a, you know, beautiful system that saw thousands and thousands of people come to faith. Like, yeah, this thing has legs. Keen, keen jelly bean. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So Jess, hit us with them. What are our big three?
So we're starting off with, what are the challenges facing the household model in a world which focuses on the individual? Which, that's what I'm kind of talking about. Yeah. We're all a little bit insular and all a little bit selfish. Question two, how does the household language relate to those called to God's mission outside of the church? Like schools and unis and work and stuff like that.
Yeah, because I think that's a, like, I'm interested to hear that, because I do think that sometimes we can get a little bit of tunnel vision. It's like everything has to happen at the church. But, and obviously the church is important. I'm sure that's what we're going to hear from Mark today. But there, you know, there are obviously that demographic of people where, you know, the work or the type of study that they're doing or just their circumstances don't allow for that, you know, regularity of a life group or whatever it might be, serving in ministry, and being put on a roster because their life doesn't work that way.
Yeah, for sure.
So how do they then partner with the mission of God? Because that shouldn't exclude them. And I don't think that's what we're going to hear today, but I'm keen to hear what that looks like.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, third and final question.
How does the move into life groups facilitate this call to join God's household and his mission?
Yeah, keen. So I think that's just going to be an awesome question for us as a community of faith. Obviously, some of our listeners may not be at GBC, but, you know, for us as a church, we're, you know, moving in this direction of life groups and wanting to really sow into that space and focus on that space, and for that to be, you know, a primary point of discipleship and connection for our church. So I'm really keen to hear that, like, vision piece about, like, what does this mean for us as a community?
For sure.
Cool stuff. Get ready, everyone. So I guess the only thing missing is the Rev Dogs Radar. So let's bring him in, Mark Radar. Welcome to the big three.
Thanks, Matt.
Hi, Jess. You're welcome.
Hey, Rev Dogs.
For everyone listening, Mark just shakes his head whenever we use that terminology. I don't know why. I don't know why he doesn't love it.
We're persevering. Oh, Rev Dog, Ray Dogs. You put this question to us at the end of the sermon, and so I'm going to put it to you. You talked a little bit about it, but who is in your spiritual household?
That's a good question.
Well, it's your question.
That's right. There it is, huh? I couldn't say it's a lousy one. I reckon that, you know, that the staff here, and probably you know, my family, a couple of my close mates, and perhaps some of the other leaders within the life of the church would probably form kind of my spiritual household in that sense. Mm. I'm not sure that I have a really clear depiction of who that would be, but that's the sort of group, you know, the people that you belong to, the people that know you, the people who share your passions and kind of get you and all that kind of stuff. That's probably the people, those are the people that I'd probably list in my household.
There you go, Matt. You made it in.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Stage 5 clinger. Give him an inch, you'll run a mile. Next stop, group hugs.
It's COVID, Matt. It's COVID.
I've always got a reason. Always got an excuse. Well, while I just lick my emotional wounds over here, let's get into the big three. So, Rita, kicking us off in our big three questions today, obviously you spoke about how back in the early church it was very common, this household language and that way of living, and how that is very different to our society today. We're very individualistic. It's about the person, not the group. And almost, you know, we prioritize the person to the detriment of the group at times, or it feels like that's the priority. So our first question to you is, what are the challenges facing this household model in a world which focuses on the individual?
There are always challenges regardless of, you know, regardless of kind of which way you fell, right? Mm. Like if the Bible had focused on the individual and we focused on the household, there's still challenges both ways. So I wouldn't want to kind of suggest that one way is superior and the other one is not. Like, I think the focus on individual needs and rights and those sorts of things is an important thing. I think it reflects kind of biblical theology in the sense of, you know, right, of our being created in the image of God and having an intrinsic worth and all of those sorts of things. Yeah. it can be pushed too far, like anything can. But I think the challenges exist around, particularly around decision making. You know, because you think about the challenges of, you know, we talk a bit about life groups, and you know, one of the challenges in life groups or serving or anything else is often time, right? Like, where am I going to find the time?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a huge challenge. And I guess that has kind of a second layer to it, which is, you know, how do you decide what things you're going to fill your life with? And then how do you make sure that you're prioritizing the right things, right? Which are two slightly different questions.
Yeah. But,
you know, like I've said this before, I mean, you know, Ecclesiastes 3, there's a time for everything, for every action under heaven. And our answer in our society right now is yes, there is a time for everything. And that time is now. We do everything now. You know, God forbid that we miss out on any opportunity.
Yeah, FOMO
that
is real.
Presents it. Yeah, you know, and it goes beyond FOMO. You just get swept up in the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, Matt, your kids are, you get into the stage where they're going to start getting involved in more and more things, right? You know, and the question as parents becomes, well, what things do they get involved in? You don't want them to miss out. You want them to, you know, like, it just becomes really complicated. So, you know, how do we make decisions between the good and the best is one thing. And I think the second question is wrapped around priorities, you know, and I think that we often end up making decisions based on what's good for me rather than what's good for other people. You know, and I think when we talk about households and we're talking, you know, like spiritually speaking, we're not just talking about the family. We're talking about where you find a sense of belonging, where you find your sense of identity. You know, in our context, you'd be the place where you would learn about discipleship, where you get to practice spiritual gifts in a safe kind of space, where you can bring people along who are on the journey of faith, because it's not nearly as intimidating to join a large group of people, like all those sorts of things. But it does mean that you have to be making decisions about that based on the good of other people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, the big challenge for us, because we make challenges for us. Sorry, we make decisions based on me and my situation. I'm tired, or I've got a big week on, or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And while you don't want to run yourself into the ground and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
At the same time, what if I started saying, what's the best for my spiritual household? You know, what's the best for the people that I'm doing life with? What's the best for the people that I'm trying to follow Jesus with? What's best? Is it best for me to show up even if I'm tired?
Yeah.
It might be better for me to do that. And it might then mean that I need to make some decisions about how much stuff I have in my life.
Yeah.
Not because it's not necessarily good for me, but because I need to have more space for other people. So I think that's, for me, that's the biggest challenge that we face in that space. Yeah.
I think I love what you said, excuse me. I love what you said about, like, you know, there is space and there is time where we do need to have a perspective of self. I think, like, you know, self-care, understanding healthy boundaries, super significant, super important, and should not be belittled and should not be overlooked in ministry.
Yep, absolutely.
Whereas sometimes it can, and I guess that's the downfall of you know, that group kind of perspective. But I think also, you know, we do live in a society that is very individualistic to the point of if you rely on other people to get your sense of belonging, responsibility, I'm trying to think of the words that you used in your sermon.
Connection and identity.
Thank you. I was getting there. That's fine. You know, it can almost be perceived as a cop out, that you need other people to kind of fulfill those things.
Well, yeah, but let me just kind of jump in. Like, I think that there's a fallacy in that, though. Like, there's a huge kind of misunderstanding, because all of our identities are shaped by other people.
Yes.
Like, whether it's our family, our brothers, our sisters, our uncles, our aunts, our parents, our schoolmates, like, no one is this island where it's like, I determine my identity and I don't need to belong anywhere and I choose. That's just rubbish. Yeah. Like, if you are not proactive in choosing the people who you are going to gain your sense of belonging from, you are going to end up in a default.
Yeah.
Someone's going to shape your life.
Yeah.
We're always shaped by people, by stuff on the news, by things that we read, by people that we engage with and interact with and look up to, and who we don't look up to. And all that stuff shapes us. And we need to be really intentional about that, or we can end up being swept into a completely well, an unthought, like a, you know, one of our values being on purpose.
Yeah.
We end up having an identity formed for us that we're not taking any control of, that we're not actually investing in, that we're not saying, I actually want to reinforce the good stuff. So I think, like, I think it's really important, like, again, like, not to take anything away from, you know, the importance of, you know, self-care and, you know, some of the things that you mentioned. Absolutely. But, you know, we need to be aware that it's just a complete myth to suggest that we are ever really truly independent. We're just not. We're just not.
Was it David Bowie who said "No Man's an Island"? I believe that's a. We were just talking about 80s rock before. And I think just thought I'd slip that in, guys. I'm so cultured. I'm all about the pop culture.
I was not alive, so I can't comment.
No, I love that, and I think, you know, we're talking about what are the challenges. I think one of the challenges is to consider, well, I guess the challenge is to not fall into that default. That you're just going to allow people to influence your life as a default because you've not been intentional, because you've not been on purpose. I actually think that that's, you know, that's a helpful and healthy thought process. And obviously ties into, you know, the question that you posed to us as a church, like, who's in your spiritual household?
And it flips around the other way as well, because then it also asks, you know, who are you influencing? You know, we tend to live in our little bubbles, and we don't really think too much about how other people are impacting us or about how we are impacting others. I mean, yeah, we do, and, you know, you pick it up, but being more intentional about that can be really significant.
Awesome. Yeah. Let's move on to question two.
So question number two is, how does this household language relate to those called to God's mission outside of the church? I'm curious about this one in particular. I know someone who is a shift worker like myself, and her whole life is work. And so she finds it really difficult to engage in the church's mission, but has said a few times that work is her mission field and that's where her focus is. How do you think this kind of relates to God's mission outside the church?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it relates to the mission in a really significant way, because I think the household is the base from which we do the mission. You know, I think that one of the, you know, I can't think what that question's kind of grappling with is what's the role of church ministry versus ministry out there? And you know, what COVID's revealed to us is, well, there's not a lot of ministry happening in here anymore, but that doesn't mean that the kingdom of God isn't advancing. You know, so I think from an organizational perspective, you know, you think about the church as a, you know, as a not-for-profit volunteer organization seeking to bring about, you know, a whole bunch of good in the community. Well, you want volunteers to be involved in that. And that's certainly an important part of what we're on about. You know, I think, you know, the church needs to care for itself and all of those sorts of things. But I reckon that the big shift for us in COVID is actually to be able to say, what our language of mission has actually been pointing to for a while. You know, like, I've been really struck by or have been really grappling with what Sunday services, what's their real role for us? What's their real role for us? Because all of our language, you know, like, we want to see lives changed by Jesus. Okay, that can happen anywhere. Okay, fine. But, you know, our language around like our mission is that everywhere we go and everything we do, we'll invite everyone to follow Jesus, which is not necessarily, it's not in here at all. It's everywhere we go. And we spend most of our week not here, you know, even in non-COVID times. And then, you know, like, the language of purpose is to help people respond to the invitation of God in his work of renewing the world through Jesus, through the enabling presence of the Spirit. So that's, like, that's all out there. And yet so often our focus has been on what we do when we're gathered together in these buildings or in this space. It's like, oh, that's really at odds with our language of vision and mission and purpose. And so I think one of the great challenges for us is to create households that become our kind of our base of operations. The people that we meet with to kind of go, oh, I'm encouraged and strengthened and prayed for and supported and all that stuff, to be able to go out and do what God's calling me to. And I can speak with people about what I feel God's calling me to and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, as I talked about on Sunday briefly, you know, our services become a gathering of households, a whole bunch of different households that gather together. And therefore, our Sunday services no longer become load-bearing to try to do all that stuff. They just become a time for all of us to gather together, to celebrate what God's doing, to be encouraged by being together, worshiping together, if and when we're ever allowed to sing again, all that kind of stuff. Pray with each other and then get back at it.
Mm.
And so the gatherings become a kind of a tighter focus when we gather together. And I think that's quite lovely. Mm. So I think the household needs to become the place where it's our base of operations. Those are the people that we're walking with.
Mm.
And everything that we do, whether it be gathered together worship or whether it's mission in our workplaces, our schools, our neighborhoods, we kind of go to both of those and then come back to the household. Yeah. So it's not like we go to church and then go to our household and back to church.
Yeah.
If you take life group, that's not the journey. The journey isn't from church to a life group and back to church, or even from church to the world and back to the church, because we're not that big, but we're big enough,
mm-hmm.
right? That it's hard to develop deep relationships. It's hard to be known by people, right? You need some sort of smaller context. The household becomes the place where all that stuff happens. Mm. And I think that enables us to talk really significantly about mission in your workplace and to equip people for that, which I think is critical.
Mm. And brings with it a bit more accountability as well. I mean, at church, we've got like the My Story time. At youth, we've got Sneaky Jesus, like sharing moments where we've kind of actively seen God at work or we've stepped out in faith.
Mm.
But we don't have a whole lot of time at church to talk about what we're doing for God's mission. But a household would provide that for sure.
Yeah, and the accountability, I think, is one of those really kind of critical pieces for our discipleship, right? Even if it's only, I can't remember where I read this, but some book talked about accountability to the point of willingness, right? Like you can't force people to be accountable, but if I'm willing to be accountable to a particular point and you hold me accountable to that point, that's just really helpful for me. And, it's really good. So I think you need those smaller spaces. Mm. So, because I think we do, Jesus changes lives in the church, right? In church gatherings and in life groups and all that kind of stuff. But most of our time is spent out there.
Yeah.
And it's out there where most people need Jesus. They need to hear the good news. They need to see it lived out. They need to see people who enact it and embody it and go, this is what it looks like to be a Christian and a midwife. This is what it looks like. And so how do we as a community of faith in particular, and I think this is part of our role as leaders and pastors, how do we actually equip you, Jess, so that you can actually think about your job as more than a job, where you may have some conversations during break? Like, are there any rhythms?
Yeah.
Like, are there things that we can be helping you think through? I'm not a midwife, so beats me, but, in terms of helping you think through, like, are there, it beats me what they even look like, but are there prayers that, you can be praying for the mums and praying for the families? And I'm not suggesting you don't do that, but we talk about that, and then you can share that with the household or with the church to kind of go, this is how I incorporate my faith. Those sorts of things that we need to really be helping people with, and that's where the equipping comes. Might need to teach you how to read your Bible, but really you need to know how to be a Christian in your workplace or in your family or your neighborhood or whatever it is.
It seems to me that as we're kind of reimagining the church, there are some cultural attitudes that we probably need to rebuild as well, and kind of, well, more break down. Because I think all of this sounds completely right. Of course we're going to be doing our mission wherever we are, and that's going to be at work, that's going to be at uni, that's going to be at school, that's going to be when we're just out and about doing our thing. That makes complete and utter sense. And yet, like, I'm still in the back of my head, I can hear, a bit of an attitude around this priority of doing, ministry here, and are you serving here? And if you're not, then, are you really doing your bit? Are you really doing your piece? And everything that we're talking about, everything, that the church is moving towards and is becoming, needs to see that attitude dismantled, really. Because, for Jess's friend who is being so intentional about what she's saying and how she's living when she's at work so that she can minister to those who she works with is of equal value to what I do on a Friday night with a room full of teenagers. Yeah. So, and we need a we need to acknowledge that, yeah. I think.
I think it needs to be placed in context more than anything else.
Mm.
Because there is a role for, you know, caring for others in the church, and yeah, there's a role absolutely. For internal ministries and, yep. you know, like all that kind of stuff. But yeah,
please don't leave our teams. Is what I'm trying
to let me just, you know, fix what Matt said. But like it is, you need to place it in context to say, listen, like it's not like this is the real thing and everything else is kind of, oh, you're only a midwife. Too bad you can't, you know. Too bad you can't contribute to the mission of God like I can.
Yeah.
that's blatantly stated. Mm. And sometimes we might invert it, right? We might say, oh, I'm only a midwife, or I'm only a school teacher, or I'm just a businessman. And like, you know, I can't participate in the mission of God like someone who's in full-time vocational ministry.
Yeah, okay.
There may be some differences in terms of what gets done, but the mission's there.
Yeah.
You know, as I say to people, you know, I don't actually know very many people who don't have faith. Mm. I work in a Christian organization that largely seeks to equip Christian people to reach people who aren't Christians. And then the other day of my week, I lecture at a Bible college. So like in terms of the mission of God and seeing lives changed from, you know, like on the journey of faith, I'm not the person who's going to be able to do that.
Mm.
I can equip you. Mm. I can encourage you. I can, you know, try to, you know, provide the frameworks that you are prepared to do that. But that's really the work of, that's the work of the church. You know, we talked about services being half time, you know, and, you know, I still sort of think we need to hand around metaphorical oranges or something, you know, and just kind of go.
One day it's going
to
happen.
Oranges. I love that.
Yeah. And just kind of go, this is half time. So what, you know, what worked out there this week?
Mm-hmm.
What didn't work? Where were the challenges? So we're not really good at, you know, kind of doing that whole, I tried to have a conversation with my friend and they just shut me down. Mm-hmm. Haven't spoke to me since. I'm really worried I've destroyed the friendship. Okay. We need to talk about that too, you know, but how do we work that stuff out and kind of go, okay, rah, rah, cheer you on, get back out there, you know, take an orange before you go, you know? So anyway.
Right on. Awesome. Well, let's move on to question three. So, Radar, obviously, a lot of what we've been talking about in this series, The Church Reimagined, is tying into some of the big changes that we as a church community here at GBC have kind of felt led into. And this stuff predates COVID. And actually, you know, I find that super encouraging. Like, I find our, even, you know, as a little aside, our theme for this year, You Are Here, like the most ironic theme ever. And yet it has been so relevant for who we are as a church this year. Anyway, that's an aside. One of the big changes is this movement into life groups and really, really focusing in and utilizing that space in a time where we can't gather as a community and, you know, we want to see discipleship happen. So how does the move into life groups facilitate this call to join God's household and his mission? Give us like that vision piece.
The vision piece.
Hit us with it, right?
All right, here it is.
You've got an audience.
I can't remember if I said this on Sunday or not, but Mark Coleman has a saying, I can't remember it exactly, but it's in order to grow larger, we need to grow smaller. And kind of how I opened my sermon, you know, like we're not like a mega church, but we're big enough that it can be really hard to find your place.
Yeah.
And so if we're actually going to see lives changed by Jesus as we participate with the plans and purposes of God in and around our world, we need to grow smaller. Like we really need to have a place where we feel we connect, where we're cared for, where we're supported and encouraged, where we can, and I'm going to talk about this next week, but where we can practice the spiritual gifts, where we can, in kind of non-threatening circumstances. Mm. You know, it's a big difference between, you know, preaching here on a Sunday and leading a section of a Bible study in your life group. Right? Yep. They're just completely different in terms of expectations and, you know, it's just different.
Yeah.
So I think we need to create those spaces where people really understand that, yes, I belong. Mm. You know, and I think for us, you know, for a long, long time, we've been a church that has some life groups. And the shift for us is really to say, no, we're a church of life groups.
Yeah.
And that shift is more than just semantics. It's a really significant one. And so we really want to encourage and train and equip and disciple our life group leaders.
Yeah.
Because again, in the past, you want to be a life group leader, great. And we've given a little bit of support here and there, but not a lot. Like you're kind of on your own. We provide you with some resources and okay, there you go. But we want to be deliberate about that.
Yeah.
And we want to be on purpose about that. We want people to kind of go, you know, I long for people to join our church through life groups. And who attend a life group for months before they ever show up at a service. But when they show up at a service and they hear us talk the language of lives changed by Jesus and, you know, participating with God, they go, oh, these are my people, because I hear that all the time in my life group. Mm. So I want people to kind of join this community of faith in that life group space. And I think it has implications for, you know, belonging and for identity and for mission and all of those sorts of things. I think they're remarkable spaces that creating leaders. I think it creates that soft space for people to join a journey of faith, because it's just, hey, I'm meeting with some people who are going to read the Bible and talk a bit about it. You want to come along? That's so much less intense than you want to come to church with me. Because, you know, on a life group, standard life group, you don't sing together. You don't do communion together. You don't have any of those kind of weird Christian things, you know, that
there may
you know,
be wine if you come to my life group.
And a cheese platter, apparently.
Oh, definitely, yes. Definitely.
You know, you don't have announcements or the offering or like those sorts of things that can so often true. Put people off.
Yeah.
And you've got relationship. So, yeah, why don't you come along? And so I think that there's enormous capacity for life groups to fuel who we are and what we're on about. And that's going to take some, it's going to take some work, but I think that, you know, it can really change things. And it becomes a bit of a structure as well for us to care for people more adequately. You know, I've really noticed in, you know, COVID times, just how dependent we are on those little conversations that you'd have with someone who drops into the church during the week or on a Sunday. You just hear about stuff. Mm. Oh, did you know that so-and-so's in the hospital? Or did you hear this? And, you know, without those little conversation pieces, that stuff gets lost.
Yeah.
Well, that's no good. You know, so how do you find that stuff out? Well, you know, life groups that are connected and supported and, you know, there's just an opportunity to share stuff that needs to be shared so people are aware and can get the help they need and all of that. So and I think that, you know, to come back to the accountability piece, I think life groups are the space where we can really lean into what it means to follow Jesus in a significant way. So I don't know if that's enough vision, but you know, that's all the stuff that I'm kind of looking forward to.
I feel like I can see it. Yeah. I can see it.
Mm, yeah. It sounds wonderful. It utopian almost.
Well, you know, and I think it's going to create its own tensions as well as its own momentum. Mm. You know, but, you know, as a senior staff, as we've been talking about it a little bit, you know, we want to create resources for life groups that are not, because currently life groups will do studies based on our services, our Sunday services, and we want to kind of untether those and just have a whole group of like resources for people about, you know, how to make decisions in the will of God and how to be I'm working on one for how to be a cultural agent and how to apply the Bible and some biblical passages that you can go through and a bunch of that kind of stuff. So that life groups can kind of pick and choose what they need most. Love and that. I think that'll be brilliant for us moving forward. But even just to be able to say to people, you know, if you have I think this will be a challenge to come back to that first question, you know, but to reframe it a little bit, what's one of our big challenges? Mm. I think time is a pretty big challenge for us, you know, and, you know, to be able to say to people, listen, if you've got a choice between being in your life group or being here on a Sunday, go to your life group.
Yeah.
I'd rather have people in life groups consistently connecting, being cared for, being discipled than here on a Sunday. Now, I'd love it if they were at both, right? You know, because I think there's something really good about gathering together and, you know, again, in
when we're allowed.
In an ideal world. Yeah. You know, singing together and just, and hearing the word together and just kind of being encouraged by being in a big gathering. I think there's really good things. So I wouldn't want to say that church is not important or, you know, don't bother coming at all, or it's not that. But if you have a choice, if you have one of those weeks and it's like, oh, I can only do one,
Yeah.
I don't want to see you Sunday. I want to see you in Thursday or Tuesday or Wednesday. That's that needs to be our priority. And that's going to be a big shift. And what do we do for people who, you know, can't find a life group for a variety of reasons, or, you know, find it really, really impractical because they travel, or they're shift workers, or, you know, whatever the case might be. How do we help that? So there's challenges ahead, but I think that, you know, in COVID times, it'll help us connect, which is really important. And I think beyond, I think it'll really shape, really, really shape the direction of our ministry and mission.
Awesome. I think the thing I love most about, or maybe not most, I think I love all of it, but one of the things that you said around, you know, church is weird. Like, I love church. I love church. I miss church. But church is a weird place. Like
the karaoke at the beginning of the end. Karaoke. What is that?
Like, it is. It's, you know, we literally, we hand a basket around and just people throw in, like, stuff. So, like, you know, it is. And yet it's always been, but that's the first place that you should come. You want to explore faith, come to church, the weirdest place you'll ever go. Like, and I love the fact that, you know, there will be people who come into a life group who have that personal invitation. Mm. Someone's brought them in. It's a conversation. They'll be able to experience. And this is, I think this is the thing I'm most excited about. They'll be able to see and witness Christians nutting it out themselves, trying to figure it out. Because, you know, as someone who was new to a church once, I walked in and I was just like, man, they all be so holy. And I'm over here like, sinful sinner that I am, like, they're so much better Christians, so much closer to God. I think, but then when you start to have conversations with people, you're like, oh, actually, we're all figuring this stuff out. We're all working on it.
Yeah.
I love that that's going to be someone's first experience of being a part of a Christian community. It's just like, let's ask these questions. Yeah. Let's chew on this stuff that we're working on. And
And once people have that relationship, then it's easier to come to church.
Yeah.
You know, I still remember this is years ago now, but I don't know, it was just before I got up to preach. And I can't remember who, one of the staff leaned across and said, oh, you see that girl in the first row, whatever it was, she's visiting, has no faith background at all. And I'm like,
make sure it's a good one.
So I got up and, like, there's a little voice in your head as you're speaking that you're like, you know, I can't remember exactly the reference, but it was like something about David. And I wanted to say, or I was going to say, so we all know the story of David. And I thought, no, we don't.
Yeah.
And so I had to, like, on the fly, I'm trying to fill in the backstory of David, which is
a bit of the gospel,
which is a really
as well.
Bad time to try to fill that in. But it was just one of those realizations of, there's so much, as you say, Matt, so much context, you know, and even the language, even some of the stuff that we think is not particularly Christian, like the offering. Like, where else are you going to hear offering?
Mm.
Like, anywhere.
Anywhere else, it's the tip jar. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
preaching for tips. Yeah, you know, so like, so I think you're right. And I think, you know, there's certainly a role for that. And I think for people who have had some church experience, coming back to church is a good place to start building those relationships, you know. But I think if they can be invited by a friend to a life group, that becomes a much softer entry point.
Absolutely.
That does put a lot of kind of pressure on the life groups. For someone who's not in one, do you kind of have some tips on, like, what are the must-haves for a life group, how to make them kind of flourish and thrive?
Oh, man.
There's a curveball.
Yeah, there is a curveball. That's great. I mean, I think you got to be committed to it. You know, the life groups that I've been in that have been, I guess, the most significant have been the ones where people are really committed to it. You know, when you have people, when it's a different group of four every week because the other four are away, you don't get any momentum in that space. I think it's useful not to have homework, but to, because you get that continuity then, because we caught up last week. So I can ask you, because I remembered, you know, if it's a fortnight from now, who knows if I'll remember, but I can ask you, hey, how'd you go with that friend of yours who you're going to chat to? You had that conversation. How'd it go? I've been praying for it this week. So, like, that follow-up homeworky kind of piece, I think, is really, really important. And I guess as a follow-on of that, you need to have some courage to ask the follow-up questions. Hey, you said you're going to do this. Did you do it? Oh, no, I didn't. Oh, all right. Well, how can I help? You know, like, whatever it might be. I think you need to have some courage in those spaces. So that only comes with time, which is why commitment to one another is so important. Sure. So you build the trust so you can have those conversations. So I think it's that sort of stuff. And then, you know, you want to make it as normal as you can. You know, so that ideally, if someone said, "Hey, you know, what are you doing tonight?" "I'm doing, my life group. We study the Bible a bit and talk about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. You want to join us?" It's not that strange.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I think that those are the big things, I guess, off the top of my head.
Yeah. Awesome. Nice. I love it. Man, big things on the horizon. Yeah. Am I right?
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm keen. All right. Well, Rita, thanks so much for joining us. Love. As always, love hearing what you have to say. Love hearing your responses to our big three.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Jess. We'll see you next week in the host seat.
Jess be thriving.
She be thriving. Just bake it.
Okay.
So Jess, big things. Big things going on for our community.
For sure.
Big things happening for church. I don't know, like... As there is every week, I feel like we say this every week. It's almost getting a bit cliche, but like so much to wrap our heads around. But what stands out for you as kind of the big ticket item? I don't know, the big take home.
I'm excited about the shift and where we're going and the importance of life groups and what that kind of provides and that this isn't a new model that we were looking like the early church was doing this. Kind of from the get-go, and it worked, and you know, I'm excited for the growth of the church. Really, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah. I think like I couldn't agree more. Like this life group space and this household mentality, I think it ties into something that you know, as Christians, as people, really, we've always had this cry for that sense of connection and relationship and community. And, you know, no place is perfect and, you know, every church kind of has its, oh, we'd love more community, we'd love more connection. And I think this is actually one of those ways in which we're going to receive that.
Yeah.
But it is a two-way street. I think, like, there is both an invitation and an opportunity, but there's also a need to kind of, well, I guess an invitation and an opportunity to both receive and to give in that space. Like we need to commit and as a church, we need to really throw ourselves into this and kind of be like, this is what it means to be a part of GBC now.
Yeah.
This is what it means to be a part of our church and we're gonna live it and love it. And I think, you know, if we're able to give ourselves into that space, I think we're gonna receive a lot of that sense of community and relational connection that we all crave, particularly during COVID-19.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like I'm excited. I think, you know, change is always tricky. It's tricky to navigate. Yeah. But what do they say? Change is as good as holiday. And I reckon we might feel a little bit refreshed by some of this new stuff and, you know, life groups, it's here to stay, so get on board, I reckon.
Yeah, for sure.
Right on. All right. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you join us for our weekly online services at gbconline.org.au this Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three this week, make sure to give us a star rating and subscribe so that you can stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big. Jessie Baker delivered some babies, they crying. She working 12 hours, she trying. Hosting the Big Three, she thriving. Jessie Baker delivered some babies, they crying. She working 12 hours, she trying. Hosting the Big Three, she thriving. Jessie Baker.